world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net, where you can find a list of past guests, download those interviews, see who's scheduled for upcoming shows, and if you're listening live, you can see the call-in numbers. We're joined this evening, January 19, 2009, by Tom Vallone, Ph.D., who works at the U.S. Patent Office and is the author of several books on the very exciting subject of zero-point energy, a source of energy that is everywhere present and constant in the universe, if I understand correctly. General physics would say that this is an untappable energy source, but that's usually when we get most interested, when science as we know it says something is impossible. Tom will be giving us an overview of the general concept of zero-point energy, as well as telling us about some recent developments toward working prototypes. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sterling. Glad to be here.
Well, we've known each other for quite some time. I didn't mention that you're also an advisor for our New Energy Congress, so it's been fun to know you in that capacity. We have met in person on several occasions. You're organizing a conference on some new energy concepts this coming fall. Very active in this endeavor. You've done a lot of shows around the nation, and you've been on radio a lot. You were on Coast to Coast recently.
That's right.
So we get to have you for an hour tonight, minus some commercial breaks. I thought it may be a good place to start would be kind of getting an overview of what is zero-point energy. What are the general concepts there?
Well, zero-point energy, first of all, is actually explained on our website, integrityresearchinstitute.org. And I just posted a policy recommendations report for the Obama Energy Environment Transition Team on our related links site page on the website. So the reason I mention that is that I appended the latest paper that I'm giving next month at the Space Propulsion Energy Sciences International Forum, which will be in Huntsville, Alabama, February 24th. And it's the proposed use of zero-bias diode arrays as a non-thermal and thermal energy harvesters. And so what we're talking about is the possibility and the evidence for converting zero-point energy to usable electricity. And why would we be able to do that? Well, it turns out that the uncertainty principle predicted over 100 years ago that there is non-thermal energy that is fluctuating everywhere, even inside the atom, out in space, in every piece of matter. And what's interesting is that physicists up till now could only cite the evidence saying that as we get closer to trying to measure the actual size or distance, then the uncertainty increases. But we never looked at the basis or the fundamental aspect of the quantum vacuum that's causing it. And so that's the interesting part, is that nature is providing us a half quantum of energy everywhere we look. And even Hal Puthoff recently published a physics review paper that predicted the electron level in every atom is supported by the quantum vacuum of energy fluctuations. So this is
becoming
mainstream.
When we talk about the zero-point energy, what kind of scale are we talking about in order to get something that's usable? Are we going to have nanotechnology, or is this something less sophisticated than that?
Well, it depends on the application, really. I advocate nanotechnology. In fact, in the paper that's posted on our website, you'll see the recommendation for nanodiodes. And the reason for that is that when we get up into the billions of diodes, each one producing, say, a picowatt or less, it's recommended that each one takes up a very little space. So if we can look at the smallest size that's available today for a PN junction and the correct zero bias configuration, it's great to fit it into just a couple nanometers. In other words, 3 nanometers per cylinder. And then you can pack a whole bunch into a cubic meter. And my vision is the same as Stephen Schwartz years ago, who did a 2050 project, interviewed 4,000 people, and they actually answered a bunch of questions, and their first thought was to the answer to the question of what they perceived was the was going to be the energy source of 2050. They said, oh, well, the energy problem has been solved. Everyone has a little unit in their home or business or vehicle. And to me, that really fulfills the vision of perpetuating the human race, because without something like that, we can't continue to consume and burn and incinerate things that we think will increase our energy concentration and density.
Now, in this technology, in the introduction, I was saying that this is an energy source that would be everywhere present, whether you're on Earth or out on a space mission somewhere, that it's a constant, non-changing source of energy everywhere. Is that correct?
That's correct. In fact, Nikola Tesla perceived that to be the case 100 years ago as well, and described that feature of zero-point energy.
So this would be the ideal clean energy source, because there's no pollution whatsoever. It's a solid state, 24/7, 365, no variation. You have a constant source of energy everywhere present and available.
Right. Yep. And it's interesting that the book I wrote on the subject first started off with a thesis, a feasibility study called Practical Conversion of Zero-Point Energy and the Extraction of It from the Quantum Vacuum. But I then produced a very readable, no-equation book called Zero-Point Energy, Fuel of the Future. And that's been selling very well. It's on Amazon and other distributor websites. But the Zero-Point Energy, Fuel of the Future really explains the history and the basic converters that have already been developed and published in peer-reviewed journals.
How much, I noticed just recently in Nature there was an article talking about the Casimir effect, which is tied to zero-point energy, and they mentioned zero-point energy in the article. And wasn't that somewhat of an anomaly for a flagship journal like Nature to use that terminology?
No, actually, it turns out, as I did the research for both books, Nature magazine, Science magazine, lots of engineering journals, as well as Physical Review, all have in the past carried articles related to zero-point energy. As you Google that term, you find lots of journals that have reported on it. So I'm happy to say that Casimir and zero-point energy is a fairly commonplace phrase, even though almost no one has written a book on the subject that we're talking about.
So it doesn't have the same stigma that, say, cold fusion has?
Not as much. A couple of years ago, we had one of the foremost world experts in zero-point energy, Dr. Fabrizio Pinno, who formerly used to work for the Jet Propulsion Laboratory and then formed his own corporation, InterstellarCorp.com. And what Dr. Pinno pointed out was that whenever he faced a problem with the journal accepting his paper, it was usually because of the zero-point energy phrase, and then he would just change it to van der Waals forces. And it turns out that there's books written on van der Waals forces, and they're describing zero-point energy.
One thing that we've not really addressed yet in kind of giving a conceptual overview is to kind of picture ourselves becoming ultra-microscopic, where we're actually down there to that level. You gave a really excellent presentation of this at the Extraordinary Technology Conference about 3 or 4 years ago. Maybe we could just go to that level for a second and talk about what that zero-point energy is doing.
Sure. What's interesting is the talk you're referring to is actually on YouTube and Google Video as well. So anyone can go and see that presentation that was very well received and also very understandable and exciting to watch. That's the feedback I got anyways.
And that was, how would we find that on YouTube? What words would we search?
Actually, just search my name, Vallone, V-A-L-O-N-E, okay. And zero-point energy. Either one will pull it up.
Okay.
Or else go to our website, integrityresearchinstitute.org, click on related links, and we have the ZPE lecture online video as a link. from the Extraordinary Technology Conference.
Okay. We might have to break this into two segments because we're going to come up on our first break here in a couple minutes.
Okay.
But maybe we can start into that, what's going on the ultra. When I say ultra microscopic, you can't go this small in microscope because the resolution is only the wavelength of light. And this is smaller than the wavelength of light, isn't it?
Right, and actually, you do. I'm happy to limit the zero point energy frequencies to the Planck length, and that really is the highest frequency we can imagine, and the smallest size we can imagine. So, but we're still dealing with lots of energy and the very microscopic size that is below the single electron or single nucleon. But the fact is that at that level, we have lots of noise going on, lots of activity, and the quantum vacuum is very explosive at that level. So that, for example, the Casimir force, if you're really looking at the microscopic level, it's literally the appearance and disappearance of particles. Most of them are electrons, and I refer to a textbook called The Quantum Vacuum by Peter Milani, who's a Los Alamos physicist. And this is the... Sure.
Go ahead.
Would you like me to continue? Okay.
Yeah.
The important point is that he describes the quantum vacuum at that level as producing particles continually, still obeying the uncertainty principle, but enough to create pressure. And that's exactly what the Casimir force does. As we bring two plates very close together, less than a micron in distance, all of a sudden we have a tremendously attractive force between those plates. And as Dr. Pinto pointed out, even boats on still water will experience a similar attraction if they get too close. The number of frequencies between them is actually limited compared to the frequencies outside that the waves produce, and so the boats will inevitably hit each other if they get too close. And that's exactly what Casimir force does as well.
Almost a sort of gravity type effect, though it's not gravity in this case.
Right, right. It's a pressure from the energy outside the plates, and that's the quantum vacuum energy. And we have to get used to the fact the quantum vacuum is not empty. It's a physical vacuum full of more energy than even nuclear power can provide us.
When we come back from break, what I'd like to do is talk about the size of a nanometer. Since we're talking about nanotechnology, that's the level we're talking about. How is that in relation to an atom, to a molecule, and how would you build a device that could harness something on that level?
Okay.
So maybe we have just a quick second here before we go to break. How big is a nanometer in relation to an atom, let's say the hydrogen atom, for example?
Well, the nanometer is 10 to the minus 9 meters, or a billionth of a meter. And really, when you get into the what I call a picometer, or 10 to the 12th, minus 10 to the 12th, that's when you get into the size of a nucleon, which would be an atom, a proton or neutron. But the hydrogen atom itself is not much bigger than the combination of one electron and one proton.
Okay.
A few picometers.
And we'll pick up on that point when we come back. How does zero point energy work?
Will you be ready when gas prices go back up? Convert your vehicle to a hydrogen boost hybrid. Get 15 to 25% improved gas mileage guaranteed or your money back. And cleaner emissions. Hydrogen Boost has 8 years of experience in hydrogen injection and mileage enhancement and a money back satisfaction guarantee. Visit www.hydrogen-boost.com or call 518-480-4026. Hydrogen Boost, 518-480-4026 or visit hydrogen-boost.com.
I plugged the scan gauge 2 into my car in 10 seconds and could read my gas mileage instantly. It helped me save on fuel by improving my driving habits. If my check engine light turns on, I can figure out why without paying a mechanic. This device has saved me money.
The scan gauge also provides information about engine load, ignition timing, and on my vehicle, it tells me the transmission temperature.
The scan gauge is manufactured right here in Mesa. Call us at 480-656-3842 or visit us online at scangauge.com. Again, that's 480-656-3842.
Free energy, now!
Drilling Allen here, coming back at you with the Free Energy Now show. We're talking this evening with Tom Vallone, who is one of the foremost, if not the foremost, experts on the subject of zero-point energy. We're going to be talking about what zero-point energy is, and some recent developments toward working prototypes. Before we went to break, we were talking about how big of a scale or how small are we talking about in zero-point energy where we can harness this, and what Pico and Nano is all about. Let's just maybe start there, and maybe you were talking about Pico is 10 to the negative negative 12th meters, and Nano is 10 to the negative 9th meters, a billionth of a meter. And that 10 to the negative 12th, you're talking about the nuclei of an atom. The nanometer is therefore threefold larger than that. And that is the scale you say you need to be at to be able to have something. You're talking about a nano diode. How would that work?
The nanodiode really rectifies any electrical energy that's present at the junction. And this happens all the time in LEDs, for example, light-emitting diodes. That literally is the source of light as we put electricity through it. There's lots of examples of solid-state lasers as well. They're simply diodes that are designed a little bit differently. So we're actually exposed to diodes all the time, including our flat-screen TVs. And they tend to have a what they call a p-n junction, positive and negative. One has a little bit of extra charge, and the other one is a deficiency of electric charge. So what's interesting is as you study transistors, you first of all have to study the p-n junction, the diode, initially, and then you have a back-to-back diode that creates a transistor. So I used to teach this stuff in a community college, and so it's interesting that everyone that gets into electrical engineering is faced with a diode configuration, but we never think of the fact that there are thermal diodes out there, and there are even ones that seem to rectify non-thermal noises. And there's been an interesting series of articles that were done back in 1982 by a researcher named Koch, K-O-C-H. And what was interesting back then is that he applied his measuring skills using the picoampere meters and found that the 1 over F noise or Johnson noise, which is something we, sort of a hissing noise we hear on radios, or used to hear on radios years ago, is actually originating from the quantum vacuum, and proved that certain solid-state devices exhibit this measurable quantum noise. And so this is our first big breakthrough, and then another researcher in England, Christian Beck, Professor Christian Beck, wrote a textbook on the subject citing his work and the fact that dark energy could be measured in a lab. So that's when I started to become very interested, when this started to become newsworthy and was being published in various journals that called attention to the fact that this is laboratory data now. It's no longer speculation or theoretical.
Yeah, let me just remind our listeners, for the people who might just be joining us here, that we're talking about an energy that would be that is everywhere present, constant. We're talking whether you're on the Earth or you're on a flight out to Mars. Anywhere in the universe, it's a constant level of background energy. And apparently we're getting close to being able to harness that, so you could have a solid-state device sitting in your garage that powers a home, requires basically no maintenance, It has no pollution. It's really an amazing technology. I thought of an analogy just now. I want to float it by you if I could. You were talking in the first segment about the analogy of where you have two boats that they get close to each other, tend to kind of run into each other, come close together, and the same effect you're seeing on the nanoscale with the Casimir effect. As these two plates get close together, they have an attractive force toward one another. And then you were talking about the radio waves. I noticed when you go to tune a radio that as you come into resonance with the channel, that all of a sudden it's like goes from really being hazy to being solid, and you have a little window on the knob where you kind of have a solid connection, then it goes back out. It doesn't follow a mathematical curve. It's like once it's close enough in resonance, it grabs on. And that grabs on effect, you're saying, could possibly be the same effect as quantum vacuum where there's zero-point energy at work?
Well, what you're referring to is more of a resonance effect, and that really is related to the type of circuitry and the locking mechanism within the electronic receiver you're using, the amplifier. But such an effect can also be seen in various circuits that resonate with certain frequencies and certain physical configurations. For example, Dr. Frank Mead, who used to be the director of the U.S. Air Force Lab out in Edwards Air Force Base, actually patented what I used to call the very first zero-point energy patent. And I analyzed that in depth in my practical conversion book. And what's interesting is that Frank Mead actually described a process of resonating with zero-point energy and then using that resonance phenomenon to not only receive the electrical oscillations from the zero-point field, but then actually rectify it as well. And he was using a couple different sphere configurations that are slightly different size. And when I called Frank after he got his patent, and I'll cite the patent number in a second here, the interesting thing was I said, well, you know, we know that as you make it smaller, it gets more energy. That's the amazing thing about zero-point energy. The smaller the device is, the bigger the energy density will be. It's the most advantageous nanotechnology you could ask for. And so he said, to my mind, the best type of combination of spheres that would create beat frequencies and be slightly different size would be a proton and a neutron. And all I got was silence on the other side of the phone. Dr. Mead says, well, that's a proprietary speculation that we've had, and my partner wouldn't like to hear you say that to too many people. But I was fascinated that I had just guessed out of the thin air, you know, the smallest particles in nature, and those are the ones to really consider using, you know. But his concept is a little bit, I would say, flawed in terms of creating a beat frequency for some good reason, but the resonance phenomenon is definitely there.
Now, I realize this may be way out there, but they're wondering how the strong force that holds the nuclei together that should be repelling each other. You've got these protons in there that like charges repel, and yet they stay together. Is there anything to their attraction that could have to do with the zero-point effect?
Oh, very likely. In fact, even the strong force has been related to gravitational forces. I must also give credit to the Putoff, Rueda, and Hayes for publishing a couple excellent articles in Physical Review, both of which, well, each one has a unique seminal contribution to the zero-point field, and that is one of them describes gravity as a zero-point energy effect, and another one of those same authors published an article on inertia being a zero-point energy effect. So we now have a fundamental understanding of both phenomena from the zero-point field. And it's really electromagnetic. That's what they discovered.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing you talk about some of the work that's being done to actually come up with some working prototypes. So
sure.
That,
Let me at least give the patent number for those who want to go to google.com/patents and check out Frank Mead's patent. It's 5 1-800-590-0031. And as far as the devices are concerned, I usually start with describing Pinto's device. And I find that Pinto's device is fascinating and completely thermodynamically feasible.
All right, well, let's get into that after the break.
Okay.
Live streaming audio on demand, 24 hours a day. Log on now at 1100kfnx.com. kfnx.com.
CNN Radio, I'm Greg Black. Like thousands of other Americans, Barack Obama celebrated Martin Luther King Day by volunteering at a community organization. The president-elect picked up a paintbrush at a shelter for homeless teenagers.
Given the crisis that we're in and the hardships that so many people are going through, we can't allow any idle hands.
Tonight, Obama hosted a black tie dinner honoring his former Republican rival. He toasted Senator John McCain, saying the two of them will try to bring about a new spirit of cooperation in Washington. A slip of the tongue today by the wife of Vice President-elect Joe Biden. Appearing on Oprah, Jill Biden revealed that Obama had given her husband his choice of being vice president or secretary of state. Biden's spokeswoman later denied that. The current vice president spending his final hours in office in a wheelchair. Dick Cheney ordered off his feet after pulling a muscle while moving. This is CNN Radio.
Looks like we're going to have a beautiful next couple of days. Highs low to mid-70s. Then by Thursday, a weak storm moves across. Most of the rain stays north of Phoenix. Snow level 7,000 feet, but we are colder. Highs low to mid-60s. Then we gradually clear out Friday and warm up for the weekend. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Currently, in downtown Phoenix, it's 67 degrees.
I plugged the ScanGauge 2 into my car in 10 seconds and could read my gas mileage instantly. It helped me save on fuel by improving my driving habits. If my check engine light turns on, I can figure out why without paying a mechanic. This device has saved me money.
The ScanGauge also provides information about engine load, ignition timing, and on my vehicle, it tells me the transmission temperature.
The ScanGauge is manufactured right here in Mesa. Call us at 480-656-3842 or visit us online at ScanGauge.com. Again, that's 480-656-3842.
Energy now.
We really want to change the world today.
Eagle Mountain, Utah.
We'll always take donations, that's for sure. Or some hard work volunteering. Give a little and you'll get back more. You know the future's looking brighter. We just want to help the world today.
Free energy now.
We really want to change the world today. We just want to help the world.
866-536-1100.
That's the call-in number if you're listening live. 866-536-1100 or 1100. We're on KFNX 1100 out of Phoenix. Our guest tonight, Tom Vallone. He's the expert around the world on zero-point energy. He's written several books, tracks on the subject, including one that's the most recent one, Zero-Point Energy, Fuel of the Future, designed kind of for the lay audience so that people can understand these concepts that are somewhat difficult to understand in a lay's perspective. What I'd like to get into now is how this energy, which is everywhere present and constant and could be an ideal energy source as a solid-state device you could plunk down in your garage, you would power your house, without ever going down, it'd be a constant output. Apparently, there are some people working towards actual prototypes where they could be harnessing this. What's the status on that?
Well, it's exciting for me because I've been tracking this for years, and now I finally got a chance to put it all together in a couple books. And the Zero Point Energy Fuel of the Future really does summarize the best inventions I've come across so far. And as I said before the break, I wanted to at least start with discussing Fabrizio Pinto's invention, a former Jet Propulsion Lab scientist and now a physicist at his own company, CEO of his own company called InterstellarTechCorp.com. And it's interesting that he's got funding for the work he does. He's been receiving numerous patents on the work. But his seminal article, the first one that I came across on the subject, was in Physical Review B, Volume 60, 21, 1999. And this was on his Casimir engine. And as we discussed earlier in the show, the Casimir force is something that draws two plates together when they get less than a micron in dimension or distance apart. Well, what Pinto designed was a 50 to 100 micron little cantilever box, using the Casimir force, but also charging it with a little bit of electrical charge to repel those two plates. So you've got two opposing forces. And what I describe in the books also is that Robert Forward, years ago, perhaps was the first to ever envision this kind of spring action between two opposing forces on the nanoscale. And he is famous for the spring type of vacuum battery. And that's a kind of a corkscrew type of design, but similar nature. So what Pinto really found and discovered and applied, and I actually have now entered it into my what I call the vacuum engineer's toolkit, is a process that can change the Casimir force instantly. And this is something that Michio Kaku, who I sent a copy of the book to, would probably get all excited about and then give you lots of diagrams and graphic movies to go along with it. But the fascinating part of this is that using a micro laser, which are now available in the micron size, and I have a picture of one to show it in the book, turning on a micro laser within this cavity instantly increases the Casimir force by at least a power of 10. And so you've got a method for producing more resultant energy from the vacuum as far as electrical charges that result from this action than the energy to turn on that laser. And you get about a half of a nanowatt for one of these 50 to 100 micron cavities. And so Pinto just makes an estimate. He does the thermodynamic engineering analysis of it, including the energy diagrams as well, finds that it fulfills thermodynamic laws, and then estimates the output from this in, say, perhaps a meter squared. There'll be 3.6 kilowatt hours per meter squared. And so you could get into a meter cubed, and you get into megawatts. So it's a very exciting invention, and perhaps we'll see that being manufactured soon, especially if you wanted to get into the prototype stage.
Now, when you're talking, if I understand right, you're actually describing a mechanical moving system that is pivoting back and forth against between these in a spring-like action. Like a nano motor, almost a nano teeter-totter, being activated,
right,
deactivated by some kind of a laser.
That's exactly right. It would be activated by a small micro laser.
So on let's stand back for a second and talk about nanotechnology in general.
Sure.
Give people kind of the lay of the land that when we talk about building things on that small of a scale. We're not just talking dream world. The people are actually doing this. This is a well-developed kind of the next frontier science, and that these kinds of capabilities are possible. So let's address that for a second.
Well, I'm happy to say that nanotechnology is a really booming business. There's been a federal nanotechnology program for years now that has made any nanotechnology project very well fundable. In fact, there's also a nanotechnology foundation that became sort of the focal point for a lot of these issues and presentations and even conferences as well. So any university that you go to nowadays will have at least some engineering department that's working on a small nanoscale device, either in the biological departments or in the mechanical engineering departments. So it's just below the micron millionth of a meter level. This is something Feynman predicted decades ago, about 50 years ago now, and now it's become a reality that small gears and motors and even molecular motors have been designed simply to run mechanically. But as I went to one of the, it's a AAAS conference, American Advancement for Science Association conference, I found the IBM team presenting innovative new nano bot that they had developed, and they were also admitting that they were looking for a nano rectifier that could power the nanobots that they were making. So every one of these nanotechnology inventions really has a problem, and the biggest problem they have is the battery or the energy source.
So if you could tie this into it, is an internal nano energy source that could power their nano devices,
it'll become a big breakthrough. And in fact, it's now already evolving in that direction. The phrase is called energy harvesting. And for example, as you walk across a entrance gate for a security gate, for example, and you have one of these ID badges that has an RFID chip in there, that RFID chip has no power whatsoever in the badge. It gets all of its power from the gate as you put the badge onto it. And, for example, the patent office and other government offices have this for their employees to use, and it's using energy harvesting in order to function. And so what I'm proposing is that there's lots of other frequencies and available energy from radio, from television, from cell phones, and we can actually design antennas to receive that energy and actually convert it to usable electricity.
Now, when you're talking about this mechanical, nanomechanical conversion of zero-point energy into an electrical force, what you were talking about earlier with diodes, that would not involve any moving parts, even on the nanoscale. This would be purely solid state. Is that correct?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
And where's that in terms of development, and when might we see something like that in the marketplace?
Well, actually, we already do see it in the marketplace, and that's what I cite in my paper on the proposed use of zero-bias diode arrays. There's lots of commercial diodes right now that are used simply to access and convert, say, microwaves, for example. You have a microwave receiver, and the diode's right in the center. So there's lots of commercial diodes that have been developed by various companies simply for that purpose. To convert energy to one-way electricity or DC electricity. But the interesting thing is all I'm looking at are the diodes that require no bias whatsoever in order to trigger the rectification. And I'm finding there's a whole bunch of those available commercially too. So it's a fascinating process to simply look through the commercial availability and then cite the references for these types of products.
So you're saying the components exist, it's just a matter of putting them together?
That's right.
Oh.
Our future will be pretty bright.
When we come back from break.
Okay.
Will you be ready when gas prices go back up? Convert your vehicle to a hydrogen boost hybrid. Get 15 to 25% improved gas mileage guaranteed or your money back. And cleaner emissions. Hydrogen Boost has 8 years of experience in hydrogen injection and mileage enhancement and a money back satisfaction guarantee. Visit www.hydrogen-boost.com or call 518-480-4026. Hydrogen Boost, 518-480-4026 or visit hydrogen-boost.com.
Free energy. now.
Sterling Allen here, coming back at you. We're talking with Tom Vallone, who is an expert in the subject of zero-point energy. We've been talking about how this stuff works and the process of coming to a prototype and actually bringing this into the marketplace. We're closer than what I had realized. He's been talking about both the mechanical system on a nanoscale level. We're talking about nanotechnology, which is really quite developed, as well as just before we went to break, we were talking about using a diode-type effect where you've got, we're using a piezoelectric-type effect. As we were talking during the break, Tom, you were talking about a new technology where they're using these piezoelectric crystals in roadways to turn the power of the cars going over them into electricity.
Right. It's called Crystals Turn Roads into Power Stations. It was just published in New Scientist in December of 2008. And so I grabbed that article and then put it into our Future Energy e-news, which is also a free service. Anyone going to our website, integrityresearchinstitute.org, you can sign up for the email e-news that goes out once a month. And so they're predicting 400 kilowatts, almost half a gigawatt, every kilometer stretch of four-lane highway. And it's converting vibration into electricity. And that's really the same concept that we're talking about in the nanoscale of converting quantum vibration into energy, into electricity.
And whether you do it through a little miniature mechanical system or through a solid-state diode-type system is still the same concept.
Absolutely. That's right. And it's interesting, too, I might as well skip ahead a little bit in the book, Zero Point Energy, Fuel of the Future, to the propulsion developments that have also been proposed. And what I'm also excited about talking is the invention by Fronig. And Fronig is fascinating for describing the possibility of traveling faster than the speed of light using the quantum vacuum, and specifically because he's now found a way to alter the permeability and permittivity of free space. And this is interesting to me because the diagrams he uses, and I reproduce with permission in the book, in the chapter describing the propulsion applications, chapter 6, and what's fascinating is that he compares the flight resistance due to an increase with speed with subsonic flight and subluminal flight. So the sound barrier and the light barrier have almost the same type of equations that describe the same type of resistance in analogous systems, in other words. So that's where the permeability and permittivity of free space become very important, because he found those variables actually showing up in the equations, and then he found a way to actually modify them using a toroid. And what I'm actually happy about sharing with the audience is the fact that as we look at the temperatures in which this type of technology works the best, he finds as the temperature goes down toward absolute zero, the technology actually improves. And then I always ask the audience, does anyone know what the temperature of outer space is? Well, it's 3 degrees above absolute zero. So it's like his invention is actually designed for outer space to work in an optimum environment.
So you would use zero-point energy, which you would. There's no question of replenishment because you're actually sitting in your energy field wherever you are.
Well, that's true, and I should qualify that to say that Dr. David Fronig has invented a propulsion method, and this was also presented at the Utah chapter of the National Space Society in 2006, and the coordinator just now released the DVDs from that, so anyone can obtain that from that chapter. But he produced a propulsion system, but I can't acknowledge or give him credit for producing an energy conversion system too. Of course, we need both on any spaceship, but at least he's got a propulsion method using the space resistance to produce a one-directional force.
Fascinating stuff. want to make sure we get into this upcoming conference that you have. And a few minutes ago, we were talking about during break that this on October 9th through 10th this year, 2009, in Washington at the Hilton, you have your conference. What's the name of the conference?
It's the Conference on Future Energy.
Conference on Future Energy, and this is actually a 10-year anniversary of the first conference you held, actually at one of the, you were working there at the U.S. Patent Office, and you used their auditorium for a conference on cold fusion.
No,
they didn't
quite.
Like that.
Not quite. I tried to, though.
Okay. You tried to, and because you tried to, they said, you're out of here. And you argued, you were out of there. They kicked you out.
Yeah, I was fired for misrepresentation and conflict of interest.
Yeah, go ahead and tell that story really quickly.
Well, originally the conference was scheduled for the State Department, the U.S. State Department. And because the change of the Open Forum secretary, the new secretary decided to let the only physicist in the whole entire U.S. State Department take a look at the subject matter. And so Dr. Zimmerman decided to say, well, this looks pretty hokey. We should probably have peer review of all the papers. And it was interesting because he did all the peer review of the papers himself and then decided to not have the conference at all, even though Paul Brown's nuclear remediation paper was approved and a few others he had actually endorsed. So Robert Park was behind the whole media blitz that actually was a smear campaign. And I ended up getting the conference into Science Magazine, Nature Magazine, and also a few other Wired Magazine as well. It had a lot of press coverage because of the controversy involved and because we had one cold fusion speaker. Robert Park played it up as if there was a whole cold fusion conference. But even the Department of Energy wanted to host it, and we already had the State Department hosting it. But, well, once it became a red herring, the DOE decided to not accept our invitation to have it there, and the State Department didn't want us. So I was told, hey, you work at the Commerce Department, why don't you go over there and ask for use of the auditorium? Well, one inquiry was enough to get me into trouble. And I was fired for misrepresentation and conflict of interest. And it took 6 years of arbitration to get my job back and with back pay. And luckily that was successful. And it turned out that the conference was held in 99 at a local Holiday Inn and had standing room only audience. So it was well received. We've had now the second international conference on future energy, and the third one will be October 9th and 10th, 2009, at the Washington Hilton.
I was able to attend the second one that you held a couple of years ago. That was excellent.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we were talking before about that right now, presently, in the nanotechnology field, are existing the components necessary to piece together a mechanism that could harness these diodes, use the diodes to harness zero-point energy.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the major recommendation that I make. And as I say, I'm also presenting a journal paper on that subject, just the diode rectification.
And that's a peer-reviewed journal. What have been the comments on that?
Oh, it's been approved for the Space Propulsion and Energy Sciences International Forum. It's called SPESIF, S-P-E-S-I-F. It's being held in Huntsville, Alabama, in the Workshop on Future Energy Sources, February 24th. So it's been well received. All the information that I present is actually referenced very well in other journals. So it's interesting to me that no one's looked for this before, and really that's the one of the lines that I make even in articles that have been published is that you have to remember zero-point energy manifests in the noise level. And so that's an important feature to remember where to look and which rock to turn over to find zero-point energy. It's really down in the noise level. And a lot of the noise that we estimate has already been acknowledged to be from unknown sources. I find engineering journals all the time that admit they have no idea where the noise comes from, but they can't get rid of it. Because they have such sensitive meters, they're now able to measure it, but then they can't shield it or eliminate it. And that's because it's being produced right in the device themselves from the zero-point field, the quantum vacuum.
Do you think it's possible that that effect will actually serve as evidence for that will help convert people to the reality of this technology?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the journals and the textbooks are already filled with the graphs and charts to prove the nanovolts per root hertz level of noise that's available from 1 hertz up to 10 to the 7th hertz, 10 megahertz. And you can go higher than that if you want, but there's white noise everywhere within that range. So all you have to do is pick the diodes and choose the frequency ranges that these diodes are capable of rectifying, and then, of course, look for the zero-bias diodes so to make sure that the half-quantum energy level won't have to jump over any barriers at all in order to go through the trap and not have to return.
Got just about a minute here as a kind of closing here.
Okay.
How far away are we from seeing zero-point energy as something that people can purchase as an energy device?
Well, we're looking forward to producing something within the next 5 to 10 years, and I'm excited about it because I didn't mention so far that magnetism is also a zero-point energy effect. We're actually working on a physics journal article to that effect. So we're looking at magnetic motors, permanent magnet motors as well, as being an early emergence of the conversion of zero-point energy.
Fascinating stuff.
Yep.
Well, Tom, it's been great having you on the show. We appreciate you coming on.
Thanks. And there's an 800 number, 800-295-7674, if they want a free newsletter, and also get on our mailing list.
Thank you.
Thank you, too.
You've been listening to Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, Pure Energy Systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net. And join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.